Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Grove Collaborative. You can save time and money this holiday season by joining the 500,000 families who use Grove to get healthy, non-toxic cleaning products delivered right to your door. Plus, you can get a free 5-piece Mrs. Meyers gift set in their holiday scents by signing up at grove.co/YHL. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're taking a look at the fascinating ways you guys decorate for different holidays around the world, plus the painful wrench in our bathroom renovation progress, and why we have a bone to pick with Taylor Swift.
Okay, so you know how a couple weeks ago we were talking about...
Wait, I burped right as you started. Just a little feminine burp.
A cute, tiny, delicate burp.
So cute. It's why you married me, for my cute burps.
It's certainly on the list. Anyways,
It's a very long list.
The tiny burps are not near the top.
I thought they were the top.
Anyways, we talked a couple weeks ago about how we were trying to reduce the stress of our bathroom renovation. And one of the things we mentioned was kind of having an open-ended, flexible timeline so that when unexpected things happen, they didn't really like throw us for a loop. And we had an unexpected thing happen that has...
Interesting use of throw us for a loop,
yes,
actually.
Because the unexpected thing was an injury sustained by me.
Not me. Did everyone notice? I didn't get hurt this time.
Yes, and it was from falling down the stairs.
The back stairs at the beach house, which the funny thing is, someone was over at my house picking something up that I Facebook Marketplaced the day before this happened. And I don't know what possessed me, but I was talking about going to the beach house that night because she knew our blog and we were like meeting each other for the first time in the kitchen. And I'm a nervous talker, so I just started talking. And I somehow was like, yes, we're going to the beach house. Those back stairs are going to kill someone.
Well, the thing with them is that they are a narrow staircase. They're steeper than normal steps. So like if you haven't seen them, I'll put a picture in the show notes. But they just don't have like the same sort of cadence or rhythm to going down like a normal staircase. Like I can walk down a normal staircase practically in my sleep, you know, because you're used to like the distance between the steps. Like you can do it so naturally.
Right. You go left, right, left, right, left, right, all the way down. These stairs turn and some of the treads, if you can picture this, are like little tiny pizza slices.
Yeah.
So your brain has to do a lot more work to work out how to place your feet so that your feet will fall on the wider part of the step or you will lose your footing. Once I was actually carrying sealer down the stairs and I was like, I better not fall with this cup of sealer. That would be so bad. The sealer would go everywhere. And I fell as I thought that. And in an effort to save the sealer from spilling, because you know when you're carrying a glass full of liquid, you like raise your arm up to try and save it. I somehow landed on the top of my foot. And I pulled a tendon in the top of my foot from it. So, like, you don't fall regular on these stairs. You fall extra special on these stairs.
Well, and I think we should point out, like, we go up and down them successfully many times. So they are not a constant death trap, but they do take a bit more care. Like, we encourage our children not to use them just because Sherry and I have to focus so much on them.
There is a front staircase for everyone else. John and I use the back staircase with a 95% success rate. Right.
Well, up until this most recent trip, I had been totally fine on them. I usually scoff at your warnings, do not fall down the stairs, because Sherry often tells me that as I'm about to go down. She goes, don't fall down the stairs. I'm like... Don't be silly.
And what were the last words I said to you right before you fell down the stairs?
Don't fall down the stairs. Let me paint the picture, because we're laughing about this, but I want to acknowledge that falling down stairs are like significant injuries sometimes to people.
So. Well, John got really hurt and then he had to lay on the ground for a while. And I had just read this article that said humans like to stand up when they fall. Like even if they break both legs, humans try to stand up on their legs. It's like a way that the body tests itself that it's okay. And John didn't even try to stand up.
My body didn't want to do that. Let me tell the story of what happened, because I think we need to paint the full picture.
Okay.
So... It was probably, what, like 4 a.m. or something like that?
Yes.
And our Chihuahua Burger had woken us up in the middle of the night, as he often does in his older age, to go to the bathroom. And since he can't go down those stairs himself, and he also can't open the door, obviously, because he's a dog,
Oh, yeah. We should say that Burger can't use the back staircase either. He can only use the front staircase.
Yeah, it's too steep for him.
With little treads that we put so he can grab it with his little feeties.
Yeah. So Burger and I have this tradition of, in the middle of the night, I have to carry him downstairs to let him go to the bathroom. So I had done this many times before, but on this particular instance, I got to, I think, the second to last step, and it was dark, and I was tired, and I was holding a chihuahua. And I just missed it. I caught it like on my heel in a funny way. And I mean, I just went backwards. Like, I don't know what I hit. Like, Sherry was like, what hurts? And I just said everything. The dog was okay. He was spooked. He ran away. But he at least was not injured in the fall. I guess I cradled him. But by cradling him, I didn't like put my own hands down to stop myself. And so like Sherry said, I kind of like laid there because I was afraid if I got up, I was either going to faint or throw up.
John has a little bit of, you know, panic fainting when something happens, or injury fainting. Once he hit his funny bone and fainted in front of me, and I felt the adrenaline for hours, and he peacefully went off to sleep like 5 minutes later. Like,
yes.
He was unfazed.
In college, I fainted in church by just giving too much in a hymn.
He gave his all.
Yes, just right down to the pew. Anyways, I crawled to the bathroom, made sure that I didn't need
to. He did crawl. He's not exaggerating. I was just relieved that John hit his butt because I was like, there's not that much crazy stuff in your butt because it took like 10 minutes. It took like 10 minutes for him to realize he didn't hit his head. He didn't hit his back.
Yeah.
He just fell on his butt. So I was relieved because there's padding in there.
Yeah, I think we should fast forward to the end that I was generally okay. Like, it was very painful for the first like half hour. But
you didn't tell him that after you crawled to the bathroom, you crawled to the couch and got under a blanket and said you were cold.
Oh, yeah. I got like intense chills, guys.
You got the shivers. And I was like, let me see your eyes. Did you have a concussion? Did you hit your head? And he's like, no, I didn't hit my head anywhere.
There was like some time in there where I was like, do I need to go to the hospital? This felt like, again, one of the most intense injuries I've had in a while. But fortunately, by morning, most of the soreness had worn off except for my elbow, which got pretty cut up and bruised, and then also my tailbone. So like, it hurt to sit for a couple days. Like, it was uncomfortable.
Bending was a problem.
Well, bending is still a little bit of a problem. This is where it relates to the bathroom, because I took a couple days off from working on the bathroom right afterwards because I was so sore from it. And even now, it's been about a week, I still have a large bruise on my upper butt. Am I allowed to say upper butt on this podcast?
I think you are.
Okay. For some reason, the placement of it makes it uncomfortable just to like squat or bend over. And a lot of the tasks in this bathroom, like tiling a shower floor or lifting boxes of tile, it involves a lot of bending and squatting. And every time it like just is really uncomfortable. Sometimes there's like a little shooting pain. But so far, I've not
barfed or fainted. Because when John has a shooting pain, like hitting the old elbow, sometimes he goes down.
Yeah. But it has made like working a little bit slower because I'm just trying to take it easier as we go on. And it just goes back to what we said in that episode that like I'm grateful we have this somewhat flexible timeline, although I am starting to feel a little bit of the crunch of like Christmas time.
We'll be fine.
I think we will be fine, but it is nice to have this open-ended time frame so that I can take it easier. I can like give myself a little bit more space to recover from my weird injury, and we don't have to like take on the stress of that.
And the update, because you're all worried about the stairs. I ordered the ugliest, but actually very helpful little plastic grippy strips, and I'm going to put them on the edge of each step. I think the problem when we fall every single time is that we catch the lip and we slide right off because it's like a shiny, rounded wooden edge.
Yeah.
And so now it's going to be this thick, ugly piece of plastic. I don't care about form anymore. I'm all about function. I love the back stairs. I would never take them out, but I will make them safe so that we're not hopefully injuring ourselves all the time.
Well, and we should put a link to those in the show notes in case anyone else has some death stairs that they need to add some grip to.
Oh, I'm very excited about it. They come with a little roller where you can like roll them onto the steps so they stay super secure.
We will see how they work out.
I will report back.
Okay, but next up, we are actually going to do a segment that was inspired by a request on Instagram. It was an idea one of you guys had. You know, we did an episode a long time ago about global design norms, and someone suggested that we talk about global holiday design norms.
Yes, her name is Christine. She lives in Norway, and she was like, I want to know how people all over the world decorate their houses, And she said, I don't know if you realize it, but the way you decorate your tree is so American, in caps lock. And I thought that was so funny because I was like, I must know how everyone not only decorates their tree, but how they celebrate all the holidays around the world, what they do to cozy up their house, what their traditions are. I thought it would be so fun to ask this question. She literally messaged it to me, and within an hour, I had one of those forms up on Instagram stories. So I'm very sorry if anyone missed it, but I got so much feedback well enough to fill this whole podcast segment with it. So I know we probably don't represent every single holiday throughout the entire globe and how everybody celebrates them, but I love that we got such a wide range. So thank you to everybody who sent stuff to us. It was really interesting to learn about, and now we want to share with you all these interesting ways that people decorate their homes for different holidays across the globe.
I feel like to make this official, we need to break out the global design norm music.
I love that. Hit the track.
We picked that music back in June and have only used it once.
Twice now.
Yes, twice. I feel like we should give this the same disclaimer we gave this last time, which is we are working off of the information you guys gave us on Instagram stories. So we can't promise that what we say is perfectly representative of the place or the holiday or the tradition. We're just doing our best to sort of regurgitate the information.
Yeah. Well, what I've learned is that even specific places, I could hear from different people in the same location and they'd have a different spin on things. So everybody does it differently, much like not everybody in America decorates their tree the same way I do.
They don't.
They definitely don't.
Some people do it the wrong way, is what you're saying?
No, I mean, I think I have too many ornaments, but I still do it because they're homemade and I love them.
Well, I think we can all agree that the holidays are very personal and people have their own personal traditions. So of course, things are going to vary from family to family, even within one region.
Yes.
I'll start off by saying the thing that was helpful for me to realize from all these submissions was just sort of the range of holidays and traditions out there, and even the range of dates, because, you know, I think of like the holiday season as just like December, but, you know, people were telling us about Diwali that is celebrated sometimes in October and November, Ramadan, which is based on a lunar calendar, and so that shifts throughout the year. I think next year it's in April. And then even some of these winter holidays going as far into early January, whether you're talking about Epiphany or Three Kings Day or even the Orthodox Christmas on January 7th. So like, I didn't realize that the holiday time was such a broad span.
Yes. And speaking of Diwali, I loved learning about this because I don't know very much about Diwali. It's a Hindu festival that listeners from India were messaging us about. And they decorate the house with lights and oil lamps. I guess the oil lamps are called diyas. And they make garlands of flowers, which sounds just lovely and sort of similar to our, you know, like poinsettia garlands and stuff, which we do in the States sometimes. And they also make rangolis, which are colorful patterns made on the floor or in the doorways using sand or rice or flour or flowers, like baking flour or beautiful flowering blooms.
Yeah, I will try to find some pictures of these to put in the show notes because I've seen some of these before and they are so beautiful. Like they're so colorful. Like I think the flowers involved are much more a rainbow of colors than like the red and green that we tend to decorate with.
Oh, I would love to see that. Yeah. Check the show notes because I think there's going to be lots of really fun pictures.
Yeah, I'll do my best to dig things up. We didn't get pictures submitted to us, so we'll see what we can find on the internet. A couple people also taught us a bit more about Ramadan and Eid. They said that since it is a holiday that is based on the lunar calendar, they tend to decorate their home with lots of like crescent moons and starlights, you know, to go with the lunar theme.
Yeah, that sounds so pretty. And I also heard from someone named Natty from Malaysia, and she also celebrates Eid. And she said they hang colorful string lights and small oil lamps outside, which also sounds very beautiful. You know, we put a lot of candles, but they're usually fake candles in the windows here. And I just love the idea that across the globe, there seems to be a really wide theme of like coziness and glowing and lights in some form, which is really interesting. And yeah. I love the lunar, like moon thing. It sounds very pretty to me.
Yeah, I think if I saw one common thread through all these celebrations, it was probably light, whether it's artificial light or candlelight. Like there's a big emphasis on the glow and I guess the celebratory nature of lights. I guess even if we look at non-winter holidays, like even, you know, the 4th of July, like fireworks, like light is a big thing. So maybe light is just a celebratory thing no matter what, but it was especially interesting in these more winter holidays that they also add to the coziness of things.
Yes, the hygge.
Someone actually mentioned that specifically. They said in Denmark that they do, I think, a daily Advent candle calendar in the month of December. So like 24 candles leading up to Christmas Day. And it helps because it's so dark in that area this time of year that it adds to all the like light and coziness and hygge, as they said.
That sounds so nice.
We also heard from someone named Carolyn who was in the Peace Corps in Azerbaijan years ago. And she said that they found they do New Year's trees there. So she was able to have a tree there, even though they weren't celebrating Christmas in that area. They also said that they have someone named Shaka Baba.
No, Shakta Baba.
Shakta Baba.
Yes, I guess he's also known as Grandfather Ice, and he looks kind of like Santa. And they also have Karkiz. Karkiz?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's Q-A-R-Q-I-Z, and she's known as Snow Girl.
Yes, I think she comes with Grandfather Ice.
I think it's cool that there's a female counterpart.
Hello, Mrs. Claus. There's already
no,
a sidekick.
No, but she stays home. She doesn't really do much.
She's probably running the show back there. We also heard from a lot of people who celebrate joint holidays under one household, in particular households that both celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah.
Yes, and I actually grew up in a house that celebrated both. My dad is Jewish, my mom is raised Catholic, and so we always had a tree, we always had a menorah. And hearing from people who do Hanukkah and Christmas at home, it sounded very similar to my upbringing, so that was kind of fun to hear about. You know, like someone named Kathleen, who lives in Washington State, said they celebrate Chrismukka, which is also something we used to say. You just smash Hanukkah and Christmas together. They do the dining room and kitchen all decorated for Hanukkah, and then they decorate for Christmas in the living room. We also heard from someone named Kate, who said they do a Christmas tree, but they decorate with blue and silver ornaments all over the tree to kind of merge those two holidays. And again, there's a definite theme of lights, because a lot of people like Lindsay Glass, who celebrates Hanukkah, says she decorates with their menorah collection all over the house and uses white Christmas lights to give it that Festival of Lights feeling. I know a lot of people who celebrate Christmas also use white lights. So I love that sort of overlap and that we all just love the glow.
I also noticed there was a big theme amongst a lot of people who were writing in from Latin American countries where they put a big emphasis on nativity scenes or manger scenes, sometimes even more so or in place of a Christmas tree. For instance, Alexandra, who's from Colombia, says they do huge nativity scenes that take up the room. And I guess they're called pesebres, if my college Spanish is holding up in my pronunciation.
I feel like I would love those and kids would love those because it's dollhouse reminiscent.
I don't think that's the purpose.
I know, but it's so cool because it's miniature stuff. It's villages. I've seen pictures of what they do. Some of it's like working things, like there's working water features. There's motorized elements to it.
Yeah, and it wasn't just limited to Latin America. We also heard from someone in Slovenia who does a big manger scene, and they say it like takes a half a day to put it up. They usually do it the day before Christmas on the 24th, and they use moss, they make paths out of sand, they use flour, like cooking flour, to make snow in the scene.
And sheep, it says. Ooh, I love a sheep. John's mom has had little decorative sheep forever, and they're the cutest things ever. I love that. And also we heard from someone in the south of France who said that clay nativity scenes with all the townspeople, you know, like fishermen, bakers, they're just very ornate and they go wider than just the manger nativity. Yeah. I think they do like entire villages, which is really cool.
We had a manger scene that was just very specifically a manger growing up, but this is definitely next level.
Yes, level up.
I also had not heard of Advent wreaths before. Like, I know of Advent calendars, obviously. I mean, if you go on Pinterest and search Advent calendar, there are 10 million iterations of them these days. I'm failing as a blogger for not knowing about this other type of Advent thing, since bloggers love an Advent activity.
Right. I think we're known more for the daily Advent, and it's the countdown of 25 days to Christmas.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, like 24 little things leading up to the 25th. These are weekly Advent, and from what we gathered from everyone telling us about them, because they span across a lot of different countries, but I guess they're an Advent wreath.
Yes.
And they're weekly, so there's four candles on the wreath. Sometimes there's a central candle that you light on Christmas.
Yeah.
But the other four candles are for the Sunday.
Yep, every Sunday leading up to Christmas. And I should mention that it's a wreath that's usually set on a tabletop. It's not hung on a door. And that was mentioned by a lot of our German readers, like Eileen, Sophia, Nicola. They all mention these Advent wreaths. I also loved hearing all the iterations of sort of the story around who is bringing gifts this season, because it's more than just Santa. For instance, speaking of Germany again, a lot of people mentioned that they tend to celebrate St. Nicholas, which is on December 6th, I believe, the Feast of St. Nicholas, and he's the person who brings the gifts. And the way they do it is that they typically set out some shoes or boots outside. And if the kids were good, St. Nicholas will leave little treats or candies in the shoes.
Yeah, we actually have a neighbor here who's of German descent, and she does that with her kids. So they put their little shoes out and find, it's almost like stockings. You know, here in America, a lot of people do stockings on the mantle, and there are little tinier gifts, like small candies and treats.
Yeah.
And I think that the shoes lend themselves to those sized objects too.
Right. Marlin from Estonia mentioned a similar tradition where they put out slippers on a windowsill, and she said it's for elves to put little candies and treats in, and I believe that's part of a Yule celebration.
We also heard from someone else in Eastern Europe who talked about Grandpa Frost. I guess they celebrate Christmas on January 7th there, which is the Orthodox Christmas. So New Year's is the first holiday that they exchange presents because, you know, New Year's comes before January 7th. And that's when Grandpa Frost visits along with the Snow Maiden. So once again, lady gets in on the action.
Well, actually, speaking of women bringing the gifts, Bernadette from Austria said that the person who brings gifts in their house is the Christkind.
I think it's Christkind.
Christkind. I also heard sometimes it's Christkindl with an L at the end.
Oh.
Who is sort of an angelic character, like she's got blonde hair and wings, and she's the one who comes on the night of the 24th to bring gifts.
She sounds very Austrian, doesn't she?
She
like
does.
A beautiful, blonde, tall Austrian person.
We heard a lot from people in sort of the German, Bavaria, Austria zone. So there are lots of cool traditions in that region of the world. The last note on the different people who bring gifts, Maria in Puerto Rico said that they receive their gifts on Three Kings Day, which is on January 6th. And what they do is to sort of mark the arrival of the three wise men. The kids leave out like hay or grass or water for the camels. And that's often left in a box under their bed. And then when they wake up in the morning, the three wise men have left them gifts in the box under their bed.
Yeah, I think that's so cool. And you know, American traditions, a lot of people leave out milk and cookies for the reindeer.
I think the cookies are for Santa.
You're right. The cookies are for Santa. Oh, and sometimes you put a carrot for the reindeer.
Yes.
But I was going to say, there's a very extra American tradition now where you sprinkle like glitter and oats in the front yard because it's reindeer food.
Yes.
We were like, I'm not putting glitter
anywhere. We can thank America's preschools for that one. There also, I thought, was a lot of interesting submissions about people's traditions around their Christmas trees. And we had even claimed on our last episode that we were, quote unquote, late putting up our tree because we didn't put it up till after Thanksgiving.
We were the last American bloggers to erect our tree. I stand firm at that statement.
Probably. But we did hear that there's a big range of when trees go up. We heard from a couple Canadians who said that like right after Halloween or in early November, someone said after Remembrance Day on November 11th, I guess that's maybe similar to Americans Veterans Day. That's when like the Christmas season officially opens in Canada because they have their Thanksgiving in October, not in November like we have. So, you know, Thanksgiving kind of like interrupts what could be a longer holiday season here in America. And I guess these Canadians are telling us they fully embrace it. As one said, they got a rep for the North Pole.
Yeah.
But then also a lot of people in several countries like Germany, Sweden, Switzerland, Hungary, Austria talked about putting their trees up either on the 23rd or the 24th of December, like right before Christmas, because the tree kind of arrives like the gifts do. Like some people, for instance, Kayla in Wisconsin said that Santa brings the Christmas tree with the gifts under it on Christmas Eve. So the kids wake up in the morning and are surprised by tree and gifts.
Well, a lot of places, what I've learned is many places still use real candles. So the tree has to be real fresh, so it does not burn the house down. And so a real fresh tree means getting it right before. And then they literally clip these actual candles on the tree, which I think would be the most beautiful and also would scare me to death.
Yes, it does sound very brave. People were also very specific about trees staying up until Epiphany or Three Kings Day on January 6th. Like there's a very defined length of time that your tree is in your house. It is from December 24th until January 6th for some people.
We live it up to like February. I think once we did March 1st. I like the glow, but I don't like doing it too early.
I don't think we did March 1st.
I really tried to be very, very lax about it. And everyone, you know, my best friend is the opposite of me. She gets the tree early. She takes it down the minute Christmas is over. Like it's on the curb before New Year's.
Can I just, as a side note, I need to address Taylor Swift for a second.
Oh, what happened?
You know her song Lover that you love.
Oh, yeah. We can leave the Christmas lights until January.
Yes.
This is our place. We make the rules.
Exactly.
Everybody does that, Taylor. Like 5 days after Christmas is January.
She's making this point, like when we own our own house, like we can bend the rules and leave our lights up longer. I'm like, that's not bending the rule very far, Taylor Swift.
She's demonstrating a lack of understanding in general life.
I just want the lyric to be till February.
February. Yes. Edit. Taylor Swift, if you're listening, I know you are.
Yeah, right.
Please just change it to February. It'd be very easy to change.
Sorry. Side rant. Anyways, back to this. Speaking of Christmas trees, I also liked hearing about people's traditions for how they get their Christmas trees. Again, we just have an artificial tree. I know that's ho-hum to some people, but it works for us. But for people who do live trees or live cut trees, I didn't realize that if you go out into the forest to like cut one down, you often need to get a permit.
From the government sometimes?
Yes. We have friends here who go to like a tree farm, and I know you have to pay obviously to do that, but I didn't really think about the permitting thing.
I also love this one. Courtney from Fargo, North Dakota, said that they pick up their real tree from a local tree farm, and then they have to let it thaw for 24 hours before they could bring it in to decorate because things are so snowy and cold there.
It's a treesicle.
It really is.
Well, and Trish from Ohio said that they actually get a tree with a root ball. So like it still has the roots in it. It's not cut so that after the holidays, they can actually plant it on their property each year.
Yes. And perhaps the coolest American thing I've heard about a tree. Kelsey from Oklahoma told us there's a company that rents potted trees and they have a subscription that starts with a baby tree. So 3 years ago, they got a baby tree. It's named Buddy. And every year they get the same tree. It's in a pot and they bring it back to their house. So they get to watch Buddy the tree grow. And after 5 or 6 years of decorating him in a pot, they plant him in the backyard because he's big enough to be like a landscaping tree.
I also loved all the submissions from people who live in the Southern Hemisphere or in warmer climates because it was a nice reminder that not everyone is in winter around these holidays. Sometimes they are in very hot, summery climates. So that not only changes the activities that they do around the holidays, but also how they decorate.
Yes. In New Zealand, I heard from so many people that Santa is basically in summer gear, like swimsuits, sunglasses. It's a full summer Santa, which I think is really funny because we also heard from people in Australia. And the first thing everyone from Australia pointed out is it's so hot for our Christmas that we do a lot of stuff outside, but we embrace the cold decorations because we want to cool off. So they embrace more of a winter Santa. Again, this is just the people we heard from.
It's probably also a personal preference thing.
Oh, totally. And also we heard from a few people in South Africa who said it's very much a summertime activity. Like there are cold lunch meets, there's swimming. They even say that they often have what's called a bra. We've talked about these before. They're
Was it a braai? Bra?
I think it's a bra. I really think we learned that. We thought it was braai and everyone said it's bra.
We learned last time that it's basically a barbecue.
Yes. So I love that there's like a barbecue swimming version of Christmas. Because here there's very much like a ham, like stuffing, you know, there's like heavy foods.
I like that ham is the opposite of swimming. It's like, no, if you can't swim,
barbecue.
Have some ham.
Like it's all hot foods here and they do all like cold cuts. Yeah. It's just funny.
It is just like a fundamental shift in how I picture this holiday. Because for me, Christmas is winter. Like winter and Christmas are like the same things.
Totally. And I loved how people decorated different things. Like in Brazil, they said they decorate a coconut tree and they go to the beach. That's how they celebrate. Instead of a Christmas tree, it's a coconut tree.
Well, if you don't have like the fir trees or pine trees or whatever, I guess you got to decorate whatever trees you got.
Right. And in Arizona, even in America, we heard from someone who puts Christmas lights on their saguaro cacti.
Oh, yeah.
And in South Carolina, people put lights on their palmetto trees. I also loved hearing over and over again that Australia used eucalyptus a ton. I love eucalyptus. I use that here too. When I make a fresh wreath, I do mostly magnolia leaves, but usually like a bunch of eucalyptus on the bottom of it. And I get like a bunch of eucalyptus from Trader Joe's or something and put it in a vase inside. It smells so good. It's so beautiful. They're called silver dollar eucalyptus. They look like big circles. So I love the idea that like, oh, that's happening in Australia too. So it's not all opposites.
Right.
Sometimes it's the exact same thing happening in different regions.
It's because the koalas love them, right?
I don't know anything about koalas.
Is that an Australian stereotype I just fell into? Sorry.
Kangaroos, I think, would be.
No, but the koalas eat eucalyptus.
They do?
Yeah.
See, I said I don't know anything about koalas, and I stand firm on that statement.
There was also this fun tradition that Will and Sarah from Newfoundland, Canada mentioned. They told us about mummers, and I had to look these up. I didn't know what mummers were.
I thought she misspelled mummies, and I was like, that's Halloween.
No, so if I'm understanding it correctly from Wikipedia, it's something that is practiced in the Newfoundland area, also parts of Ireland and the UK, and it involves a group of friends or family who dress up in disguise, like Sarah and Will said, like they use old clothes, and they visit homes within their community and their neighborhood during the 12 days of Christmas. And if the mummers, I guess mummers is the name for the people, are welcomed into the house, they often do a variety of informal performances that may include dance, music, or jokes, and the hosts have to guess who the mummers are. So, like, you're disguised, and your neighbor has to guess that it's you.
Oh, it's so sweet. And once the mummers have been identified, they remove their disguises, spend some social time with the hosts, and then travel as a group to the next home. I love this so much. It's like caroling. We do this in the U.S., but not really. We do it in Hallmark movies. I don't know many people
just
who do
done
it
in commercials.
Real. Yes. But it's so cool that people actually go into their neighbors' homes. I would really get into the dressing up so they wouldn't know who I am. I would do some impressions with my voice so they couldn't tell who I was.
They say that people do that. They disguise their voice. They often stuff their clothes. They have a different body type and everything.
I love that.
I think we should do this to our neighbors without notifying them that we're doing it.
No, I feel like it would not go over well.
We just show up next door dressed in a funny costume.
Well, it does say if the mummers are welcomed in, and I think we would not be welcomed in.
We're halfway down the street. No one has let us in. The police have been called. We also came across a couple submissions of traditions that we actually do, but I didn't realize they were tied to regional traditions elsewhere. The first one was we had some people from New Mexico who talked about luminarias or farolitos. Farolitos is Spanish for little lantern. And it actually sounds exactly like what our neighborhood does. We just call them luminaries. It's on Christmas Eve around our neighborhood. We put out white paper bags with sand on the bottom and candles in them.
Real candles. We do use real candles for that.
We do. And so on Christmas Eve, the whole neighborhood here, our neighborhood here in Richmond, Virginia, not New Mexico, gets lined with these beautiful lighted bags. And it's so pretty. We drive around the neighborhood to check them all out. Like it's hard to describe, but I guess that's a very New Mexican tradition, which I didn't realize. We also do the pickle ornament in the tree thing, which I guess is a German tradition. Someone named Beth from Wisconsin says her family has German roots, and so they hide a pickle ornament in the tree. And I don't know how we started doing this. Did someone just give us a pickle ornament?
On our first book tour, so like 7 or 8 years ago, someone gave us a pickle and said it's a German tradition. You hide the pickle in the tree, and the person who finds the pickle has like good luck the upcoming year. I think that's how we heard it. And I've also heard whoever finds the pickle gets to open the presents first.
Yes.
So there's something auspicious and wonderful about finding the pickle.
Oh, see, I'd forgotten the story about how we got it, so I didn't realize you knew it was part of a German tradition.
I did know that. And you know, my best friend Kat's of German descent, and she does the pickle too. So I think it's like a very common thing for Americans to have done the pickle thing if they know about the pickle.
Yeah, so we just have a pickle ornament, and we let one of our kids hide it. We usually find it immediately.
Well, it does help because it's green, and the tree is green, so it blends in a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for something like that, I think even World Market sells them. Like, the pickle is a pretty common thing to find now.
And now I know why we do it.
I think it's so much fun. And also, in the Philippines, we heard that they decorate with star lanterns made of seashells or capiz that are called aperol. You know I'm into this because they had me at capiz, and star lanterns just sound so beautiful and glowy and welcoming. And once again, it's that light theme.
I love that someone named Maria actually wrote you to say when she was putting hers up, she thought of you because it reminded her so much of the fixtures that we have around our house.
I love capiz, you guys. You can never have enough capiz.
I wanted to end on this one because it came from a very special place that I didn't know was an official place. But according to Tara on Instagram, she lives in the land of cats. Which means she celebrates Christmas, but just without a tree or with a tree alternative, because otherwise her cats would knock it over.
Yes, we also heard from someone named Lexi who said, we celebrate Christmas, but with a cat. So it's like regular Christmas, but no tree.
No tree. We had a tree with my cat growing up, but he would often climb it. We had to tether it to the wall so he wouldn't knock it over.
Yeah, there was like a heavy-duty fishing wire that held it.
One time our tree did fall over.
Then it broke a lot of stuff.
I don't think it was really that much damage, but it was, you know, devastating at the time. It was shocking.
I'm glad you pushed through that event and continue to live your life.
With an artificial tree. Anyways, we got so many more submissions. I'm sorry we can't go through all of them now, but thank you to everyone who took time to write in and share something with us about how they celebrate and how they decorate this time of year. It was so fun to read through all of them. And I hope we did an okay job representing them here.
Yeah, that was lots of fun, you guys. We should do that every year.
And if you have non-holiday design norms from your part of the globe, we are still taking submissions for those so we can do an update at some point in the future about how you decorate your home through all the other months of the year as well.
Yeah, we should link to that in the show notes too, because if you haven't heard that and you found this interesting, learning about decorating for the holidays around the globe, I think you'll really be interested to hear just general design norms throughout the globe, the way that people in certain regions decorate that's very different from other regions. It was fascinating to learn about. So we'll put that in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast.
And this week for We're Digging, I'm actually digging something that I got as a gift for my birthday last month. So I think it could be a good gift idea for this season if you have someone that you're having trouble shopping for. But first, we have to take a quick break.
The holidays are a crazy time of year. I don't need to remind you guys that, but I wanted to remind you of this week's sponsor, Grove Collaborative, because they're a great way to simplify at least one area of your life this season.
Yeah, you've probably heard us say before that Grove is an online marketplace where every brand they carry is good for you and the planet, like Seventh Generation, Dr. Bronner's, and Tom's of Maine. Plus, you can either shop as needed or set up recurring shipments so you never run short on shampoo or hand soap or even toilet paper.
None of which you want to not have, especially if you've got guests staying with you.
Exactly. So Grove is a great way to make sure you're well stocked for the next few weeks. You know, order everything in one place and don't worry about it again.
Yeah. And the other good news is that it's the season for Mrs. Meyer's special holiday scents, peppermint, orange clove, and Iowa pine. I would have to say that Iowa pine is hands down my favorite Mrs. Meyer scent that they make ever. And I love that it's that time of year that you can actually get it.
Well, and if you're a new Grove Collaborative customer, you can get your hands on a whole bunch of Iowa pine for free with your first order. Just sign up at grove.co/YHL and you'll get a free 5-piece Mrs. Meyer's cleaning set and the scent of your choice. So if you're a peppermint or orange clove person, you can do that too.
But Iowa pine for life, trust me.
Whatever it is, just make sure you go to grove.co/YHL to get all that. It's not .com, it's grove.co/YHL. I almost teased this We're Digging by saying it was another clothing item, since I know you guys love my fashion picks.
Pause for applause. Nobody applauds.
Pause for silence. But this is actually footwear that I was gifted, and I was actually happy to receive it as a gift.
Which is rare for John.
No, I love receiving gifts.
Yeah, but I don't think you've ever been like, please let it be something you put on my feet.
Well, you know, clothing and shoes are a hard thing to gift someone. But I was given by my sisters, I have three sisters, and they went in on a group gift card for Allbirds shoes for me for my birthday. And I know like you're a Rothy's devotee, but Rothy's does not make men's shoes. And But Allbirds makes both women's and men's shoes. And they are billed as the world's most comfortable shoes. And I figured, now I had a gift card for him, I should try them out, right?
The minute John received the gift card, he was on his phone picking the color. I think it's actually really fun to give someone a gift card for something that comes in a variety of, you know, designs or colors, because you do get to feel like you're customizing it for yourself. So instead of ordering him like a black pair, he got to pick sort of a heathered gray pair.
Yes, I went out on a limb and got gray.
He's very brave.
Well, they are super comfortable. And they're, I guess, made of wool or something. I don't know all the makeup of them, but they are just like some of the softest, most flexible shoes I have owned. My routine in the past year has been wearing like Target shoes, which are not the best. I mean, you get what you pay for. They hold up and they
look nice. I don't know. I have some Target sandals that last forever. It really depends.
Well, these are like $20 men's.
He gets like the canvas shoes. Yeah. And I feel like those have a very flat sole.
Yes. They do the job I need them to do. But I feel like now that I have these Allbirds, they not only feel much more comfortable, they fit very nicely. I also am going to take care of them better than I do some of my other cheap shoes.
Side rant. John ruins shoes so often.
I do lots of messy things. And so I have a cycle of shoes where I get new shoes, I wear them out. And as they start to get dirty, they become my work shoes or my yard shoes. It's a cycle. Circle of life. Okay.
I just feel like sometimes they're not ready to be yard shoes, but you mow in them and then they become yard shoes prematurely.
We will have this conversation off mic.
The Allbirds, the $95 shoes, better not be in the yard.
No, they will not be. So I was just going to put out there that if you have someone on your list, in particular a guy, because I know guys are sometimes hard to shop for, I think this is a gift that would be well received. They have a few different styles. I just got the runners, which are kind of like their, you know, basic sneaker, but it's nice looking. Like, I think they look very nice. They feel very good. So I think it's a good gift idea.
Yeah, they're really cute. And what I'm digging involves knives, but not knives you buy. It's a movie and it's called Knives Out. We saw it right before Thanksgiving. John and I snuck out and had a date night before all the holiday craziness, which I highly recommend on its own as a life hack. Like, schedule a babysitter like the Wednesday or Tuesday before Thanksgiving and creep out and do something fun with your man or your lady. But anyway, Knives Out, I went into with zero expectations. And it was so quirky and enjoyable. I give it a 10 out of 10. I was ogling the house. Like, the house is beautiful. It's an ancient, gorgeous old manor. Just that alone, like, if the plot was awful, I would say, please go see this movie for the house. There are even, like, cool house features. The house has, like, hidden things in it that make it really amazing if you're into architecture and design and homes. But on top of that, the characters are wonderful. The plot is so interesting. There are so many twists and turns. There's Daniel Craig in it, who plays the least Daniel Craig character I've ever seen him play.
Yeah, instead of James Bond, he's, like, a foghorn leghorn detective.
He literally is like, well, let's look at the crime scene. And I was like, uh-oh, this is taking me out of it a little bit, this really bad accent. Then you realize it's like all part of the campy whodunit vibe that's going on. There are all these, like, you know, almost like the board game Clue came
right
to life.
That's a great example.
And I, as a kid, loved Clue so much. And I still, to this day, love murder mysteries and whodunit. So I just thought it was joyful, wonderful. I wouldn't bring little kids to it because it is a murder mystery.
But I will say it's not really gory or graphic or dark or scary. Like, it is done in a lighthearted-ish way.
Yes, I would not call this a scary movie or a horror at all.
Oh, no, not at all. It's almost a comedy.
Yes, it is. It's like a whodunit comedy with twists and turns and suspense, but not the scary kind, just the, like, delightful laughter kind.
Long story short, you'll love it.
You will love it. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
Also, thanks again to everyone who shared their holiday decorating traditions with us for this episode. We couldn't squeeze them all into the show, but please know that we had a great time reading every single one. So please keep sending them our way, whether they're holiday related or not.
Well, and to keep it global, I wanted to shout out Jocelyn on Instagram, who said she listened while on a train between Brussels and Antwerp in Belgium. She also said that someone noticed her screen with our podcast on it and asked if we were her friends.
I mean, at this point, we basically are.
All of us are besties. And like John said, in this week's show notes, we'll try to dig up some photos of the different holiday decor and traditions that you guys shared with us, like those colorful Diwali decorations and those elaborate nativity scenes.
And of course, there will be a link to my shoes. I gotta give the people what they want, Sherry.
Pause for more silence.
Later.
Bye.
I know it's a lot, the hair, the bod, when you're staring at a demigod.
Sherry was singing that the other day in the kitchen, and she was like, I should do a The Rock impression on the podcast.
Like, I've never sounded more like Dwayne The Rock Johnson in my life.
I've never rolled my eyes as much.
John didn't even want to press record because he feared I was going to do this.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You should do that in The Rock voice.
Oh, yeah.
What can I say except you're welcome?
That was not as good. Hold on.
Oh, was it?